The synergistic intersection between that culture and the Bush administration's narrative is a significant piece of the puzzle. Only an overheated 24/7 infotainment culture that had trivialized the very idea of reality, and with it what was once known as news, could be so successfully manipulated by those in power. In an earlier America, it would have been far harder for a White House to get away with so many hollow spectacles and misleading public statements for as long as it did. When future Americans look back on this period and ask, how did this happen? The cultural context of the early 21st century may explain at least as much as the characters and official actions that played out against that backdrop. The scenario unfolds in two acts. Part one, Making the Sale, retraces the elaborate propagandistic stagecraft with which the Bush administration rolled out and prosecuted the war in Iraq, and which reached its crescendo with the president's triumphant declaration that major combat operations had ended on May 1, 2003. Though the events recounted are of recent vintage, looking back on them, even at this early date, sometimes resembles a stop-action replay of a train wreck. Yet that wreck might have been averted. It's striking how many clues to the administration's subterfuge were hiding in plain sight in the months before the war. Part 2, Buyer's Remorse, tells how that story literally and figuratively sprang leaks, culminating in the catastrophe of Hurricane Katrina, which 4 years after 9/11 wreaked havoc on what was left of the Bush administration's credibility following the calamity of Iraq. It was then that Bush's approval ratings fell into the 30s, never, as of this writing, to rise out of them for any sustained period of time. In what may have been the single most revealing paragraph anyone has reported about the Bush administration, the author Ron Suskind, writing in the New York Times Magazine 2 weeks before the 2004 election, recounted a conversation with a presidential aide who spoke sarcastically of journalists and their reality-based community. The aide, who sounded uncannily like Karl Rove, informed Suskind with great condescension that a judicious study of discernible reality is not the way the world really works anymore. The aide explained, "We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality, judiciously as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too, and that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to just study what we do." What follows is one reality-based observer's study, judicious, I hope, of how those fictional realities were created, and how they came undone when actual reality, whether in Iraq or at home, became just too blatant to be ignored. Part 1, Making the Sale. Chapter 1, Home to the Heartland. The summer of 2001 had been one of national torpor, with some cheap entertainment for spice. The still novice president was vacationing in Crawford, Texas, but he was hardly the only American gone fishing. In New York, the tabloids whipped up a frenzy about the legal travails of a marginal but conspicuously wealthy 30-year-old show business publicist, Lizzie Grubman, who in an apparent fit of impatience had plowed her SUV into a crowd outside a nightclub in the Hamptons and then fled. The rest of the country, having quickly determined that the murder of the wife of the actor Robert Blake was too B-list to qualify as an O.J. Simpson rerun, feasted instead on Gary Condit. A backbencher congressman from Modesto, California, Condit could not explain the abrupt disappearance of a 24-year-old Washington intern, Chandra Levy, with whom he may or may not have had an extramarital affair. In retrospect, the Condit affair, or non-affair, we never did find out, was the last gasp of the fin de siècle Clinton culture and its bread and circuses of sex scandals. With Clinton gone from center stage, the country had to settle for a dim-witted Price Club surrogate, and did. Desperate pundits worked overtime to turn a pale understudy into a star. The Condit Levy soap opera was a snapshot of a waning era. It quickly mushroomed into a classic 24/7 cable TV mediathon in the O.J. pioneered format. A nugget of salacious news was rapidly inflated with acres of speculation, a large cast of supporting players, and teams of